You're back with Annie and Tobias on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Don Sutherland on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well. Thank you, Annie.
Yeah, great. Well, it's been a bit of a while since we spoke to you, and you were sent off to do some work and research into the upcoming economic roundtable.
Yes, and I do wish to talk about that from a slightly different angle than last time. But first thing I'd like to do, Annie, if I may, is send out solidarity greetings to the people of Cuba and all of my friends in Cuba who, of course, in our time, it's going to be about midnight tonight, begin their commemoration and celebration of their National Rebellion Day.
Oh, fantastic.
When they fought for and established fundamental principles of sovereignty, and in doing so had to defeat American imperialism, which has angrily responded to them with what is now, I think, about a decades-long economic blockade. And I was very happy earlier in the week to begin our next project to get some equipment into the Cuban Children's Hospital that, in effect, defies the blockade. So if I hope you... That little indulgence is acceptable to everyone that we and solidarity also to all of us Australians who actively work to support Cuba against US imperialism's blockade against their people.
Yeah, exactly. Consciousness that that was actually going to happen. So I'm glad that you brought it up. Interesting that Cuba has been actively defending itself against American imperialism while we actively prostrate ourselves in front of it.
Yeah. And I mean, if people want to go, there's also the, I was looking at it later in the year, they're sending out the Southern Cross brigades are going to Cuba. And so
that's
you can.
Right.
You can go, and I presume you've been maybe a few times as well, Don?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, and it sounds amazing from what everyone, not that this is an ad spot for them, but I mean, it sounds like an incredible opportunity, like you work with and find out about Cuba and have all these experiences that aren't just, willy-nilly traveling or anything like that.
Yeah, well, it's one very good way of learning about how to stand up to American imperialism as a nation and the whole concept of sovereignty, how they define it and how it is deeply rooted in the day-to-day belief system of the people. But perhaps we can come back to that another time. I would like to develop our thinking about the economic reform roundtable.
I thought you were having a stroke.
It's an unfortunate acronym, as I said last time. I think the important thing about this, well, there's a number of angles. Firstly, if we had a government with strong socialist characteristics and wanted those to go further, we would do something similar, actually, because productivity is so important for a humanist approach to the development of society and for the rescue and replenishment of nature. And so conceptually, the fact that the government is doing it is there's a lot of common sense in it. But although, of course, they are not doing it for those reasons. But those reasons that I gave about what we would do, if you like, mean that we have to take it seriously and work out exactly what's going on. And in so doing, improve our economic literacy, deepen it, put that deep into the day-to-day thinking.
So, Don, what are they doing it for?
Well, they're doing it because there are indeed serious problems in capitalist societies, not just Australia's, but the capitalist societies around the world. Capitalism itself is not solving the problems that it creates.
No, but don't they want to go into dictatorship?
Well, some do, and some want to and see greater survivability in the continuity of a very restricted parliamentary democracy. And so there is a battle going on within that. But I think we can best begin to understand it with, you know, we're taking what is going to be talked about the most, that is productivity, back into our daily experience. And I'll just say, by, it's an economic reform roundtable in which productivity has been pushed to be the centrepiece.
Yeah, but you see, the whole thing about productivity, I mean, I was thinking as I was driving riding along here this morning about the fundamental inequality that's been created within our society, even down to the inability for a whole groups of people to be able to use the social fabric because of the change in technological approach. Everyone has to move along towards the belief structure and economic belief from these commercial outlets, you know, like the use of AI, for example, not intrinsically bad, but it's being used to roughhouse people into particular methodologies and excludes whole sections of the community from actually interacting.
Well, I think this is a really important angle. First thing is that economic reform, there's nothing at all happening in this conference about closing the gap.
Well, therefore, it's a complete waste of time.
Secondly, we go to the process itself. There are going to be, at this stage, there are 24 invitees. The government has invited 24 people. They are the elite, right? And most of them, in fact, all of them, although three or four, five perhaps, with less intensity, all believe in the dynamics that have created the problems and have been supporters of decision-making in the past that have made the problems worse. So 19 out of the 25 invitees definitely are contributors to the problem. And the problems are many. The most, in terms of daily life, there is no question that there is a connection between climate change and the algal bloom. So the productivity possibilities of food production in South Australia are now prescribed by the accumulated and flow-on effects of climate change. Secondly, part of the problem of the worsening productivity performance is that the first indicator, the populist mainstream indicator of wealth per person, shows it declining. Wealth per person is already in recession. And that's reinforced by other measures of the same thing.
It's funny you should say this, because I'm reading this book called Solenoid, and it's set in Romania. And it's like everything in the Balkans is terrible. All dictatorships, all society, everything about it doesn't work for ordinary people. So is this what they're after? It doesn't work for ordinary people. It only works for the 19 or 24 people who are sitting around this table.
Well, there will be a minority of wage earners that end up with marginally better wages income.
You're a bully for them.
Into their superannuation and so on. But that's part of convincing us. See, what they're on about is getting a consensus, not just at the elite level, but starting there, a consensus that flows down through the general population. Now, I'm not talking, they're going to get resistance as well, particularly from activists who actually pay attention to what they're doing. But the real problem will be the extent to which this whole process enables the working class majority to sort of be complacent and to give consent to, in a de facto way, to what anything new the government wants to do beyond what it committed to in the election. So this consent building process we have to have our head around as well, and that means we do have to get on top of the facts as well, like there is currently declining standards of living. The statistics on that the mainstream media report are clear in themselves, but it's actually far worse because they are skewed. So they say that they're really bad, but they're actually much worse because their approach includes all of those on millions of dollars of wealth and income every year.
So the statistical analysis is ridiculous.
Yeah. So working all of this out is very important. What is the opportunity? You see, they're so clever. Well, it's more than clever. It's also sensible and so on. In setting up a process of extending the consensus building in three ways. Firstly, through the event itself and how it's reported in the mainstream media. And that would include...
Yeah, we get the idea. What about two?
Number two is where the Productivity Commission, a major instrument of protecting the system that causes the problem, has engaged in a consultation exercise, an open consultation exercise, that invited people, anyone, using their website, to put in ideas to solve the problem, particularly the productivity problem. And they're worth having a look at because some of them, you know, they'd make sense to the likes of you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So they're worth having a look at the PC website. Now, secondly, then you have, for example, the Australian Council of Trade Unions did...
Yeah, they did their survey and it came out with people telling us that they're overworked and they've got no confidence in anything.
Yeah, so that was a good thing to do conceptually. It's very hard to see the detail.
Well, it's qualitative. It's not quantitative, and therefore the powers that be don't see it as being new science.
But it takes us, the principal public discussion the ACTU generated, takes us to that workers ought to be led by managers who pay attention to them. But let me tell you a little story. About 40 years ago, I was seconded to the Labor Council in South Australia to be the technology education officer, where my task was to develop and run training programs, union education, for workers grappling with new forms of technology and technology management at that time. And so, you know, great education. Lucky me, I get to sit down with 15 to 20 workers every couple of weeks for 3 days or 2 days to learn about their experience of this. In the process, I visited the place that makes wine casks, fills the casks with wine, and so on. Cut a long story short, walking around the shop floor, and the biggest problem in that production process was how to make sure that when the silver bladder filled with wine drops into the cask, the tap lines up with the perforation holes in the box.
Yep.
You know that problem? Probably.
Yeah, go on. What happened? You
know, the rate was at the time about 6 out of 10 dropped so that the tap aligned to the perforation box. A worker picked up a bit of wire on the floor, fashioned it into a particular shape, wound it onto the end of the chute where the bladder dropped from, and it jumped from about 6 out of 10 to on average 8 or 9 out of 10, falling into the right place. About 3 weeks later, she was made redundant. So there's productivity improvement controlled by the employer. Where consensus says the workers should volunteer what they know about how to make production more efficient, in this system, the first option is to lay off the worker.
That's right. And it's funny, you know, because my experience of running a business or creating a business over at the top of another one was resistant workers who taught me a very valuable lesson. The reason I had to work out why it was that they were sitting on their hands, and it was because of their supreme cynicism about the employer and their relationship with that employer.
So I guess the point I'm trying to make about this, reinforced by your example as well, is that this this is a very narrow way. What the ACT is focused on is probably more in their material than what has been made public so far. So I'll qualify it there. But that particular, selecting that to be the public focus has got a serious problem with it from a worker's point of view. And I do hope that the ACT has got a deeper set of proposals than that. We see, for example, that the AMWU National Secretary has put the shorter working week as a general entitlement out there. A shorter working week with no loss of pay. And so he should, and that's good. Last time we talked, I said that ought to be an element of what could be a concept of socially useful productivity employment. So that's the sort of thing that I hope comes through. But the real question is, how do we make this, all of this stuff, more relevant to and improve, if you like to use terrible jargon, the economic literacy of working people so that they become the primary agents in making the changes that are necessary as time goes by. Now,
well, we have to wrap up shortly, so come up with a make sure that you get your chance.
I'll finish with this to explain the problem. The problem is fundamentally the system, and it has to be changed through socialist momentum of some form. Good example. Every night, Alan Cole is on the ABC, and he gives often a very handy little pithy summary of what's going on in the economy. Recently, he repeated the new jargon, capital deepening. Capital deepening is the new jargon that is intended to make everything benign. The idea behind, the simple concept is that there is much more investment in physical assets relative to the labour employed or the wages paid. The ratio of fixed assets to wages increases. The problem with that is that it requires much, much more fixed asset investment that Australian capitalism has been willing to deliver. But the more you deliver, in the very first instance, profits fall.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've got a long history. They've got a long history of not actually investing.
And fixing that requires an increase in the rate of exploitation.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, we have to leave it there. So you don't hold out much hope for this round table?
I think it's very dangerous, but I think it's a great opportunity for us to build a more unified alternative.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Well, it's a watching brief, and we'll find out more about it as it develops. Thanks very much for talking to us this morning, Don.
Lovely to do so. Best wishes to everybody.
And that was Don Sutherland, and we are right at the end of the program. But we just remind you that if you're interested in a double pass to go and see Union, which is on Tuesday, the 29th of July, 9:10 p.m. at the Nova, it tells you about the union organising for Amazon workers at the JFK 8 warehouse in Staten Island. You can give us a call, or on Thursday, the 31st of July, there's a couple of double passes to The Invisible Doctrine. Investigative journalist George Mobius unpacks the hidden origin, strategy, spread and global influence of neoliberalism. Both films are at the Nova and they're both part of the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. The phone number is
9419 8377. Asia Pacific Currents is up next. Thanks very much for listening and we'll see you next week.
And we're going to go out with Double Dare Ya, Bikini Kill.